Hello and welcome to the Mark Groves podcast. I remember hearing years ago this quote that human systems move in the direction of the questions we ask. So if we want to move into a better direction, we have to ask better questions. And it really points to the importance of where are we directing ourselves to? And are we asking the right questions to get clarity, alignment, all that stuff? And that's why it's so important that the questions we ask early in the relating process, for example, are questions that are going to determine, is this person a match? And we're often afraid to ask questions that might make it so it becomes revealed that they're not aligned. Right? Which is ironic, right? The whole point of dating is to figure out if someone's aligned, yet we avoid the very conversations that might cause us to break apart or not continue to move forward together. We might not want to ask what someone is looking for because we're afraid that they're not looking for what we're looking for. We might be afraid to ask what's going on between us because we're afraid to push them away from being too much, not realizing that this very important point of inquiry that will create safety so I can open up further, I'm actually shoving down, you know, I'm negating my own need for clarity in order to maintain a connection. So I'm already in the people-pleasing conflict avoidance part of relating, and we're just getting started. So, you know, I really love the interview that I have to share with you today from Lindsay Jill Roth, who wrote this incredible book called Romance and Practicalities. She is so funny. You're going to absolutely love this episode. She tells the story that I don't even want to give of what it's about because I don't want to give it away. It's such a good story, and you have to stay to hear how it resolves. It's incredible. And how life invites us to explore things for our own resolution, right? That life invites us to learn things so we can then go out and teach them. And what she's going to teach us is the importance of asking questions, what kind of questions and why, and what that can do for your love life and your life in general. So before we dive in, make sure that wherever you listen to this episode, you hit the subscribe button so you do not miss any episodes. And that helps support the show and support you, because you're going to get more advice on how to create epic relationships and an epic life. So without further ado, here's Lindsay Jill Roth. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. Today, I'm so excited. Look how joyous this
it's cover so happy
is. I know, I feel like, oh, this is so good. Lindsay Jill Roth, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so happy you flew into Vegas.
I did.
To from via London and
London,
somewhere else,
via New York, via Vegas. You were my excuse.
That's the best.
So
I like
thank
this.
You
no, I'm so happy. And your first time.
It is my first time. I can't believe I'm admitting it with you here, but it was awesome. I had a day on the strip.
Yeah,
I got in. I did. You know, it's winter, so I didn't want any delays to delay us. I just walked and walked and walked. I felt like I was in this weird world.
It is a weird world.
I embraced every light, everything that came to me, and I had a great day.
Yeah, it is actually a magical place. You know, I think for a lot of people, it's like where their shadow dances, which is, you know.
It was interesting because I just let myself go. You know, if you look at a map, you know where the strip is, but then you can wend your way throughout. I had no agenda, which, when do we just have no agenda?
Right.
I was listening to actually you in my ears, podcasting, getting ready for today.
Right on. Yeah.
And I was walking and wending and just observing. It was great.
Yeah, it's so good. Do you feel like the way you made your way through the strip is ways that you've tried to live life?
Such a good question.
Yeah,
look
just
at
the
you
way you
going
said
straight
it, I
there.
Was like, oh, that's really interesting how your perception, the way that you did it, was so like liberating.
I'm a very chilled type A, if that makes sense.
Yeah, those are not the same, but I hear you.
They're not. Yeah. I have my things.
Yeah.
I know what they are. You know, I thought it was going to be a few minutes late today because it's my first time here. I didn't realize how much time things take
right.
In terms, there was a convention.
Even though they're close.
They're close, yeah. But there was a convention, so the taxi line was really long. To check out was really long. There were too many people at the patisserie, so I couldn't get coffee because there was a conference. So everything just took a little longer. So, you know, I texted you saying, I'm going to be late. And you said, don't stress. And
yeah.
I wasn't late, which was great.
No,
but
I was.
It's okay. That was not late shaming you. I really wasn't.
Yeah. No, I know.
But so, yes, I think where there's freedom, I take it. And where there's restriction, I understand it.
Hmm. I like that.
Thanks.
How does, you know, when I think about the, when someone writes a book and writes a book like this, which I think the energy of this book is so great because you bring like humor into something
Thank
that I
you.
Think for a lot of people, there's a rigidity to it, and not by anyone's fault, but, you know, relationships are correlated to suffering, pain, loss, rejection, abandonment. And so it's so great when levity makes its way into the conversation.
Our okay? lives should have levity.
Yes.
And we should have fun with the levity. I mean, looking back, there are times where it did not feel fun or funny. I just look back and I think, God, that was a great time.
Did you ever think that you'd write a book about love and relationships?
So I'm a storyteller.
Yeah.
And I try and find the story in everything. And I am the test case for romances and practicalities. That's yeah. it. And I saw what I was going through. And I ended up writing this book because I needed this book when I was going through.
As you were in it.
As I was in it. Yeah. I needed it. And, you know, I created a system, which is what this book is based on. But I also told my story, and that's what's different about this book. So it's a great beach read meets a system that I created so that people could have healthy long-term relationships, and I tell them how to get there. Mm-hmm. So I don't leave anyone hanging. But the point is, there was a point where I knew when I created this system and it was starting to help people that I was just giving it to people. There was a moment where I thought, I need to tell this story. I love love. I know you appreciate
that. Yeah, I do.
And I love helping people. So let's put it all together. Let's have some fun with it. And let's just go.
Yeah, it's amazing when it finally clicks in our own lives, you know, where we're like, oh, like if I just build these skills and like, because so many of us think that whatever we inherited is our destiny. You know, that's, I think it's Tony Robbins who says, your biography is not your destiny unless you live there. And I think for so many, we first orient to like, I guess this is just how it is, not realizing that it's a skill set. And like to be able to be brought through the practicality part mm-hmm. of how, like, what is it that makes exceptional relationships and exceptional long-term connections? Because for a lot of people, I think when they hear stats on something like divorce, they're going, well, that's, then fuck this. Like, there's no hope. And there is
Well, there's hope. No hope, and there's actually no education.
Exactly. How could you have hope without education?
Right? You take continuing education courses to keep your skills up for right. something you've learned, yet no one actually teaches you to have a healthy long-term relationship.
We should have CEs for continuing education yeah. credits that like every year to just get your driver's license
yes.
up, you have to do relationship stuff.
It's brilliant.
It would make you a better driver.
Absolutely.
And you'd have to explore.
Maybe marriages would last.
yeah, you'd have to explore why you have road rage.
Yeah.
Because that is a great learning.
Absolutely.
I used to be like, oh my God,
let's do it. Let's do it together.
Off, right? Let's create this education. Everyone's like,
create
I just
love,
want my driver's
the
license.
Education.
Let's do it. So when you began this journey, mm-hmm. what sparked it? Like what made, where is the first version of you that was like, okay, chapter one, I need this.
So the first version of me was the girl who was the bridesmaid in everyone else's weddings, who was trying to date, really not understanding why my relationships weren't going the distance. And I, you know, you would get the friends trying to set you up and saying, I don't know, I can't find anyone. You're too good for anyone. Yet you'd be in a situation where you thought you were connecting, but it wasn't going past that. And mm-hmm. I took a minute, said to myself, okay, something's going on, right? I was becoming afraid, actually. This fear of rejection, this fear of being wrong, I started to lose myself, right? So if it's not happening for you, you start to turn things inward.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go on dates and I wouldn't feel like me because I was trying to be what I thought I should be, what I thought they wanted. And I really do love myself. And I did love myself, but I had to work hard to get back to myself. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so this book came from fear in terms of I found someone I really, really liked. And we started going out And there was definitely a connection there. He's called the Brit in my book. And it got to the point where we were really into each other, but we had a lot of differences. And you'll see the book starts off, I'm not giving anything away, but 30 minutes before my second date with this Brit who is in New York on an open-ended project, his project became closed.
Oh, man.
And he was now going to have to go back to London. But here's the thing. That was the best thing that could have ever happened to us. Because something in me, this fear of me, was just let go. Because I was really myself with him. Because I thought, okay, we're going to do long distance. We'll try this. We'll still try and get to know each other. I didn't run my texts by friends. I was just me with him. And I just nurtured this communication between us until it got to a point where we liked each other. And I said, you know what? I'm just going for it. If we want to go the distance, then we need to know everything and anything we can about each other. And if we're comfortable asking each other questions about literally anything and everything, then that's a really good sign for us. So I came up with this idea. Initially, I called it Romances and Practicalities. It's been this title from the beginning, and you've written books, and
That's great.
That doesn't stick.
Yeah.
Titles often change, but from the beginning, it was about the practicality of our romance. And let me tell you something, practicality, super sexy. So I came up with this idea to ask each other questions about everything. I made this huge list. And it was not a what do you like most about my hair list. It was, if we have a child, would we circumcise them? What are your thoughts on debt? Who in your life has a relationship you want to emulate? What are your childhood wounds around relationships? How do you argue? Questions that really got to the center of who we are. And when we did these questions together over FaceTime, we had the most intimate conversations. When we did these in person, we were making out very fast. And there was something to this. And so for us, this worked. And that's when I turned to science, social science experts, to validate what I had done, because I saw how much closer it brought us.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with this theory that it's so much easier to revisit something than to speak about it for the first time when you're years in or months in or weeks in.
Mm.
So it starts by finding someone who you're comfortable with. Actually, let me take that back. It starts with asking yourself these questions. And that's really the origin of this book. I don't even know if I said that in a straightforward way, but.
Like you hadn't gotten clear about the things yourself?
Yes.
What do you think led to your vagueness in those? Like why you'd never labeled some of that?
I think it all comes down to childhood.
Yeah.
I think for me, I really grew up as a people pleaser. And I had to work on boundaries.
Yeah.
And once I got clear on those and clear on what was important to me, and once I really decided to choose versus be chosen, I think to take an old line from Sex and the City, my taxi light was on. I was ready, but I had to work on myself first. And I think sometimes you don't always know why something is happening when it happens. And if you're lucky, you can look back and understand why.
What do you mean by that? Like what was happening? That
I think I was in this place where I couldn't understand why I couldn't find it.
Yeah. Like connection or a long-term
the right
relationship.
Connection.
Yeah.
The right healthy
aligned
connection. One where, you know, I know you speak a lot about this mutuality in terms of two people choosing each other and not compromising. In terms of you're not compromising yourself. I don't mean you're being overly picky.
Yeah.
But you're not compromising yourself. You're not losing yourself to be with someone because of what they need. And I think I had a tendency to do that. I tended to show up on a date having made cookies.
Damn, that's right? A good date.
It's great.
I've never been on a first date where someone showed up. Cookies.
Maybe not a first date, but like, oh, we're having a night and I'll bake cookies, which is great.
Yeah.
But when it comes from a place of not thinking you're enough without the cookies.
That cookie's got an emotional hook.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And once I really understood that I was enough, I was able to be enough.
That's really good because you think like, although those chocolate chip cookies with some sea salt on top.
Really delicious.
Just dreaming.
Really. Couple different kinds of chocolate chips.
Oh, so you actually like, you did it.
My friend Vicky has the best recipe for chocolate chip cookies.
We better put that in the show notes.
Vicky, we're coming for you.
Vicky, we're getting your recipe out.
The best.
If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you already know how much I rave about Cozy Earth. And my wife and I aren't just in love with their sheets. We're actually hooked on their loungewear, too. I mean, everything they make is insanely comfortable. We can't stop talking about their waffle knit collection. Pants, tees, and Henleys, they're all the perfect mix of comfort and style. And let me tell you, these waffle knits are a total game changer. They're incredibly cozy and soft, and they're made from an eco-friendly blend of bamboo viscose that feels amazing against your skin. But it's not just about the comfort. These pieces are breathable, they're temperature regulating, so they keep you feeling fresh and cool no matter how long you wear them. They're lightweight, not heavy or hot, and perfect for lounging around the house, working from home, or even running errands. Honestly, you can wear them anywhere. And here's the best part. Cozy Earth is offering an exclusive 40% off discount just for my listeners. So whether you're looking to upgrade your loungewear or treat yourself to the most luxurious sheets ever, and I mean that, you'll save big. All you have to do is head to CozyEarth.com and use the code MARK at checkout. Trust me, once you try their waffle knit collection and any of their other amazing products, you will see why I'm obsessed with this company. Don't wait. Go to CozyEarth.com, use the code MARK, and enjoy 40% off everything. You deserve to feel this good every single day. It's interesting to think that because of the energetic of the baking of the cookie, that the other person, this is going to sound really weird.
Go.
But I think it's a good metaphor, is eating your unworthiness, is tasting your unworthiness, which is actually a really, because like, not you specifically, but when we engage in those types of behaviors, which I've certainly done, because I have like a similar way of that I related before I figured out and asked questions like, why do I relate this way? That the experience of the other person accepting whatever the like supercharging of ourselves, we're trying to be different or more, is that we don't believe we are. And that's, I'm sure for people listening or watching, that's a pretty relatable.
100%.
Right.
So before you bake the cookies, think about why you're baking the cookies.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I went on this date with the girlfriend I had in my early 30s, and the first date, I remember going to leave the house and I was wearing some like Sanooks. Do you know those shoes?
Yeah.
They're like surf kind of style.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, oh, I should probably not wear these shoes. And then I was like, no, these are like some of my favorite shoes. So I wore them, and on the date, one of the first things she said to me was, I love your shoes. And I remember that moment because it was like, oh, although our relationship didn't last.
She liked your shoes,
though. Yeah, she liked my shoes. There was a instant like, oh, there's, I tried to do something not me, and I came as me, and it was seen. Mm-hmm. And that was like, I can just feel what that was like, of like, you knew. Like, you knew it was actually important to wear the shoes to filter.
Absolutely. Yeah. Also, you feel better in your shoes that you like.
Right, like wearing your clothes, the things you love. Now, listen, everybody, don't be bringing your jogging pants everywhere, you know? It's funny how we've like normalized athleisure.
Well, it's so funny because I spent a lot of time in London and New York, and so I'm in UK, US. And
they got fancy joggers now.
Joggers are a thing, and I do love a good yoga pants.
Yeah.
I really, really do, but I love an outfit too, so you can make it look cute. But 10 years ago, man, you're walking around London in your athleisure and people are looking at you.
That is so funny.
It is so funny.
We've like gotten like, everybody just be comfortable all the time. Like casual Friday. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when that was like a thing at work?
Big thing.
Now it's just work. It's interesting.
And post-COVID too, people dress differently.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, it's when you started to ask that question, because this is, I think, is really interesting of like when you started to ask the questions to yourself, which then you brought the questions through the inquiry with the Brit, you're having to answer these questions.
Correct.
And there's a safety. There's like a you can be all of you. And how did you hold the possibility that the answers where before you might not have asked them because it might have meant misalignment?
Yep.
How did you hold the possibility that it actually was bringing like that truth forward that could have you guys separate?
So it's important to note that these questions are not ones where someone is right and the other person is wrong. So if you go in thinking, I have to be right on this, it means that the possibility of the other person being wrong is high. So the goal is communication and finding your alignment. And I think sometimes we hold it, people use the term red flags, right? We hold on to something that we think is a red flag.
Yeah.
When actually it's not. It's just figuring out what that item, that thing, that way actually means to you. And then seeing if it works with the other person.
Yeah.
There are things that I would go into relationships thinking were super important to me that once I explored my own questions, I realized either why they were important, why they were not important, and why I held on to them being so important. And that's why this starts with you. You talk about your 3-month pause, for example.
Yeah.
So in my mind, this works like your book gets read.
Yeah.
You go on your 3-month pause. This is your 3-month pause reading.
Mm, that's great.
Right? Because these are what you should be asking yourself. Now, look, there's also an awesome story throughout this. There's the beach read element of this too. So if you want really fun stories about people's relationships and people's experiences to help you understand that what you're going through is okay, that's in there too.
That's great. We all want to hear how we navigate something through someone having navigated.
And how to something. Do it.
Yeah. Yeah, which is why story is so powerful as a human moment. That's why it's through human history. That's like how we teach values and lessons and learnings. And
this is a journey. This book is a journey. It's my journey throughout.
Right. They're taking on the highs and lows.
The highs and lows, the weird things, the cool things, the cultural things, the misunderstandings, the word changes, the word differences. But also I interviewed about 100 people for this book.
Wow.
Experts.
How long did it take you to write?
Such a good question. Yeah. Because I lived
this book. It's been writing
your
whole,
right.
Yeah.
I lived this
book. What year was the Brit? Like, when did you first meet the Brit?
10 years ago.
So this book has been in its birthing process for a while.
A long time.
Yeah.
This book, there were different iterations of this book. And then COVID happened and I really, I changed it up. It was a little more Carrie Bradshaw.
Yeah.
And now it's Malcolm Gladwell and Carrie Bradshaw.
Which, what a great merger. Because Malcolm Gladwell is one of the best storytellers, for sure.
I know. I really should be careful throwing his name in with this to heighten myself to that standard. But it really is. There is social science here to explain this theory and why it works. And then there are the experts like Dr. Alexandra Solomon, who actually, she's amazing. So I went to Northwestern.
Oh, you did?
But she wasn't teaching there when I was there. Sadly, because she teaches a course, basically Marriage 101. This book is not about getting married. You do not have to get. This book is not saying you should get married. It's really about healthy long-term relationships and whatever
align.
That means to you. But she and her course has the word marriage in it. She and I have talked about should it be in the title, should it not? But she talks about relationships, healthy relationships, communication, and it's the hands down the most popular class.
Easily,
it fills up like crazy.
She's also one of the best teachers I've ever met.
She was so generous with me, with her insights, her time, her knowledge. She's validated the system.
That's
Dr.
great.
Nicole Lapera, Mark Hyman, Daniel Amen, real people who have their own theories and audiences have come together to say, this is a great tool.
Yeah, that's so great.
Which is so validating to me as well.
What do you think is in the power of questions? Like why?
Communication.
Yeah.
Now, but here, communication sounds so easy, right?
I don't think. I think it's hard.
It's just communication. Just talk to each other.
That's true.
But it's all your shit.
Yeah, you're stirring up some
from
stuff.
From what you came from, and people communicate differently. There are questions in here about how do you communicate?
Yeah.
Because if you understand how you communicate, how you argue, how people communicated around you growing up, you are going to be a better partner to the person you've chosen to communicate the most with.
Yeah, what you said earlier about if we had an adaptive strategy to people please and like caretake, then, you know, we ultimately don't have a full development of the self, mm-hmm. if any self. So it's like we've always oriented around others. So then through the questions that people are asking in this book with themselves or with their partners or both, that they're able to act, what emerges is this curiosity, likely, I would imagine, this sort of like reparenting of mm-hmm. themselves, that they're being able to ask questions that they always hoped that a parent would help them develop the answers to, that they were a separate, you know, that they had separate answers, separate desires, separate values, separate. But so many of us never actually experience that, not for the fault of the parent, but because the parent's in their own shit and inherited their stuff. And now here we inherit that. And so I really think about how asking those questions is also such an act of presence, to read this book, to actually sit down and say, not only am I going to laugh and like enjoy story, but I'm actually going to, one, really start to label what am I looking for? What's important to me? What do I believe in? That's so beautiful. That's like what we're waiting for.
Taking the time for yourself is giving yourself that gift of understanding.
Yeah.
So, I mean, wouldn't you, if you're getting to know someone mm-hmm. and you say to them, how do you argue? How do you fight?
Yeah.
And they look at you and say, listen, I'll be honest, I'm really passive aggressive. And I know it's maybe not the best quality, but I'm really passive aggressive. I'm going to say something mean, but then I'll get over it and we can move on. Wouldn't you respect that person so much more in a way if they came to you and said, it's not my best trait, but this is what I go to. Just know it's not you, it's me. I recognize that, but this is my default. Then wouldn't you say, okay, great. I'm going to be prepared for that.
Yeah. And are you willing to shift that?
Yeah. You know? And maybe we could work on that together. I mean, my husband and I, I like to process things by talking them out. I just want to go. Right. Yeah. I want to work out my feelings as I'm having them. I think quickly. I express myself. I just need to sort of be in it. Right.
Yeah.
He needs a minute. That doesn't work.
No.
So we spoke about it. And we have an understanding now, a decade later, that frankly, he and I joke. I mean, we argue, but we don't actually argue that often because we've worked out so much shit, right? But I know that I need to give him a minute and he knows that I need to just get some of it out and then we can take a pause and revisit. But we only know that because we spoke about the practicality of it.
Mm-hmm. Like how do we meet both people's needs?
How do we do this so that we're not we can focus on the thing we're arguing about and not resenting the other person for how they play the game.
Yeah, and when you start to get the language of these questions, we don't often know how to frame them. So
what's in there. I also think people don't know what to ask.
No, they don't, and they're terrified to ask specific things.
Take money.
Yeah.
Money is a great chapter. I love this chapter.
Okay, so this one is really good. This is question number 166.
So we're in.
We're deep in.
We're deep.
Would you help your parents, siblings, or friends financially if they needed it? Would you expect them to pay you back? That's such a good question, mm-hmm. especially if it's correlated to the couple, like as a couple, your money, or like even as an individual, like I'm watching you give $5,000 or whatever it is.
There's a great story in the book of a couple who they're on the way up. They just got married. They don't have kids yet. And his brother needs help. And this interview with this couple was beautiful when they started talking about this. He started crying when we were on Zoom together because it was such an emotional topic for them. He felt so deeply about it and they disagreed. And she's thinking, why are we giving money to your brother when we don't even have our own kids yet? We don't own a house yet. I can't remember if they had gotten married or they were getting married and there were expenses that they had just paid or were paying. But they came to this question at such different points of view. But by the way, it's not a typical question when you talk about money. People think you say, how much money do you make? How much is your rent?
Yeah.
Do you want to own a house?
Do you have debt?
Do you have debt?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on debt? All great questions. But money has to do, money is, did you choose to make your tea this morning and bring it with you? Or did you stop at Starbucks on your way in? That's right. A question about money.
If you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, I want to build those skills. I want to learn how to create epic love. I want to heal from a breakup. I want to heal my nervous system as I'm in the dating process so I can choose the most aligned partner to create a future with. Well, I have the perfect opportunity for you. Because you're listening to the Create the Love podcast, you get to bypass the waiting list for the Create the Love community. You can go to createthelove.com/yes and get started with whichever course is most applicable to your life and the skill set you want to develop. And here's one thing I know for certain is that great love can't wait. You have to get started right away. Your healing can't wait. So go register now at createthelove.com/yes and get started right away. Yeah, it's so interesting because money brings up shame.
Mm-hmm.
And then money, like people don't get divorced because of money. They get divorced because of different money stories.
Correct.
You know, so the...
And years of feeling differently about money and burrowing those actual feelings or hiding.
Not even
things.
Knowing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Like we don't know that we have all these beliefs about money and does wealth mean bad and, you know, all this stuff, socioeconomic stuff. Did money mean you didn't have a voice? Mm-hmm. Did you watch your mother silence herself because the father weaponized finance?
Yeah.
Or like she stayed in abuse because she couldn't leave? Like those are all so important.
All of it. Or, by the way, what is the responsibility? If you have two people who are dating, talk to another person about this in the book. One comes from money, real money. The other really doesn't. Whose responsibility is it when you're dating to bring up things like what kind of restaurant we go to?
Yeah.
And is one person expecting, well, I want to contribute to this, but I really can't? Because I don't make enough money. Whose responsibility is it to bring it up? Is it the person who feels maybe shame about that because they can't afford the dinner or they're worried about going to a restaurant that they can't afford? Or is it on the person who has it to say, I got you. Please don't feel badly about this. I want to take you somewhere like this.
Yeah. And do they mean it?
Do they mean it? And what does that say for the future?
Right. And how are we going to manage this? Like if one person's job, let's say, makes they're a teacher, which we all know teachers get underpaid. So let's say they
should
make,
be the highest paid job in the world.
100%. So like, I don't know, maybe a teacher makes, let's say 50,000. It's like, and the other person makes 400. Like, how do you talk about paying bills? And and it's so.
So Susie Orman goes into a great, great, great piece in the book
about
that in terms of percentages.
Yeah. I've always liked that as a way. And also that you get to excavate the shame that is associated that likely no one has ever, the pain, the suffering that happened. Like this one person got everything they want, but maybe their mom or dad bought them things because they couldn't be present.
Correct.
So they met needs with wants. And then this other person didn't get anything they wanted, but their parents were present. And, you know, so you have these two like really opposite experiences. And what I always find so fascinating about the overlay of money and love is that money and relationship are both correlated to safety, security, and power.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these deep, like deeply aligned and similar wounding patterns that emerge.
Yep.
That's why I see that with entrepreneurship. When I work with entrepreneurs, it's like, oh, this is family stuff. This is, you think it's about your self-expression or like charging more is the issue. It's the vulnerability, the self-worth stuff.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I encourage people to talk about it as well, because a lot of times we internalize something that we don't understand.
Yeah.
So
say more on that.
So if someone's, take money as an example, if someone's behaving a particular way and it's all money centric, we're only judging them on the outside of what we see mm-hmm. about that. And we think, what did I do something? He only wanted to, and I'm heterosexual, right? So I'm going with the he here because that's what I'm used to. But did he only want to spend on one drink each because he doesn't like me very much? I've just now internalized something to do with money. And he is thinking, I grew up with alcoholic parents. I don't want to have her think that it's all about the alcohol here. So I'm going there, you know, and really I'm internalizing that he might not like me and he's trying to be really considerate about the date. So communicating about these things is a really great way to get an even playing field. Maybe not even, but an understanding of the field we're playing on.
Well, and so then you understand their world and the intention behind. And on a first date, you can never get to a second date because of that assumption. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think about when like men and women are on a first date and the who pays. And that's such a deeply cultural question that people don't recognize is like the woman might be thinking, I need him to pay because he invited me out and I still want to be taken care of and all that kind of stuff. And the man might think, well, I want to invite her to have the option to go halfies because
if that's what she believes.
And I have a mother who said to me that when we receive gifts, we give up autonomy, always give a woman space for her power. She's thinking, what a cheap bastard.
Yes.
And he's thinking, I just want her to have space to be all of her and not to feel energetically like she owes me something. Because the science does say that if you accept a gift from someone, you then feel, because of the principle of reciprocity, you feel like you owe them something.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't even know.
Cookies on a first date.
Right. It's slick. Nice slick moves. I'm curious, how did you decide or how did you get the people you interviewed as the stories of relationship?
I was just really authentic about me and what I was creating.
Yeah.
I went for it. And I've worked in entertainment for a long time, so I don't take that for granted. I know people that I'm able to go to, so I went to them. But at first, I didn't have anything. I had a concept and a dream and the desire to give everybody an opportunity to have a healthy long-term relationship by my learnings and then teachings. And to what you were saying at the beginning, right at the beginning of when we started speaking, for me, the word no, sort of like a jumping off point to start a conversation mm-hmm. and to understand why. And I really just appealed to people with what I was doing. And shockingly, before I had a publisher, before I was out wide with this, people really responded to it. I think people are shaped by their relationships. Not I think. I know people are shaped by their relationships. And whether you've had good love, bad love, indifferent love, you have feelings about love.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, you 100%. You know, you like, even if you don't know that, like you pretend you don't, you do. And it's the pretending you don't that is like preventing us from connection, mm-hmm. from connection and relationship. That's why I think the brilliance of asking questions is like, I know it can feel maybe sometimes very vulnerable or you're going to push someone mm-hmm. away. But if someone runs away because you asked questions,
they're not your person.
Exactly. It's like the best filtration process in the world.
But the reason why this book is not just a list of questions is that that's like giving someone a tool, but not showing them how to use it.
Yeah.
So this really, there's safety in reading about this system. I got you. I really do have you. Trust me, please, because I lived through the slog. You know what it's like to write a book.
Yeah.
I wrote through the slog. It's hard.
It is. And you're excavating and creating the architecture of what your journey
was.
Of a
new system.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to make it different. I wanted to make it different from all those other books out there to really give people a sense of enjoyment as they read so that they could have this tool in their pocket to show up and say, it's a little early, but let me test the waters. Hey, how do you feel about pets?
Yeah, I like that you started with pets. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really interesting, it makes so much sense. Can you explain why?
Because yes.
When I was reading about that, I was like, oh, this is, yeah, I never thought about it, but it makes a lot of sense.
The theory of starting with something as harmless as pets is that it's questions about animals are a great way to know if someone's a carer, how they feel about animals, if you're going to be with a cat lady or a dog person, or if you're going to have snakes roaming around your, you know, your house.
Things to know.
As Dr. Evan Anton, the hot vet, people's sexiest vet, so generously talked to me about. Understanding how people feel about animals can tell you about their childhood. You can hear stories about their dogs, their cats, their pets, their family, who walked them, who fed them, how it was losing them, how they'll never have a pet again because of their experience. All of these things are clues to the person who's sitting across from you without them feeling interrogated. You're asking about pets.
Yeah, you're asking about something that is like adjacent to, you know?
Yeah.
Like you're hearing about other things.
Listen, growing up, all of our pets have food names in my family.
Yeah.
Once you start talking about that and digging in, you're going to find out why, what kind of pets I had, what my family was like, how old was I when I got my first pet. And it's such a harmless way and fun way to get to know someone.
Why did all your animals have food names?
We love our food.
What was an example?
Pasta was our little puppy growing up.
Oh my God, that's such a great name for a dog.
Pasta. Great. A little white dog called
Pasta.
You're
yelling Pasta. Everyone's
Pasta.
Like, yes, Pasta.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fun.
It wasn't Noodle. It was Pasta.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So we've got an Oreo. We had a Pasta. Fudgy.
Were they all dogs?
All dogs.
Yeah, we were a dog family too.
Tell me more about that.
I always loved dogs. I felt like they were just like so joyous and adventurous. And like no matter what happens in your life, your dog's not going anywhere.
Did your dog sleep in your bed growing up?
No.
Why?
No. Our dogs when I was young sat on the couch sometimes, but I didn't like a dog on the couch or in my bed.
Okay.
Because it made it furry.
Do you see how much I've learned about you in that second?
Yeah, right.
And you're just going off about your dog.
You're like, I love sleeping with my shedding dog.
Yeah, we're done.
We're going to have to figure that one out.
Exactly.
Especially like, I'm like, do you want a dog in there when you're like, want to be intimate? You know?
Or what does that look like?
Yeah, that's weird.
Or by the way, okay, we live in a city now.
Yeah.
What does
in
that
New York,
look like?
That'd be way different.
It's way different.
Yeah.
Think about it. If you have kids and dogs, okay, and one of you is not home and it's at night and one of them, and your dog has to be walked and you've got a baby.
Yeah.
You have a little one right now.
Yeah.
You have to suit that kid up. It's January, snowing. Put him in their stuff, get him in a stroller and go walk that dog.
Yeah, it's a whole other world.
It's a whole thing.
So if you're dating someone who has a dog or kids.
Or both.
Yeah, or both. Then now you know you're signing up for like a way different life.
Mm-hmm.
Which are you willing to do that? What does your morning look like? How do you see you know, a new person being involved in your kid's life, if you have kids from a previous marriage.
Yeah.
Do you want to? What's your relationship to your ex, to the co-parent?
Right.
Do
you split this dog with someone?
Okay, I've always thought, like when someone's like, oh, I share a dog with an ex. I'm like, no, one of you take the dog. Like, stop holding the tether.
Do you know what? I don't know. I was never in that situation. I rarely dated someone who had pets, actually. So I don't know how I would feel in that situation.
So if the Brit had a Yorkshire Terrier. That mm-hmm. feels fitting.
Called Whiskey.
Right. With his ex. And he had to talk to her all the time and drop it off and pick it up. Is that, do you think you would, you and the Brit, would you be pumped about that?
I don't know. Is the ex super cool? Do I want to go hang out with her?
Maybe.
I don't know.
The dog lives till 18. It's only 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a commitment.
Right.
But that's the thing. You become a throuple. You become a throuple.
Yeah. You are. You're signing up for all, and you have to decide if you want to, if that is a true, authentic yes, yeah. or if it's a maybe, what makes it.
And by the way, what does it say about your partner that they have chosen that decision, right? That they have chosen to stay with their ex in some capacity because of this pet. What does that say?
Yeah.
And we need to get Dr. Evan Anton on the line.
Right.
Now.
I would think what is the intention? Is it because they have a hard time ending things and closing doors?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people do. Like, that's for sure.
But by the way, it also goes back to money. Let's go full circle here.
Yeah.
Who's paying for those vet bills? Are you splitting them?
Yeah.
Who's paying for the food? Who's paying, you know?
It's such a, and then you're still tied financially.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. There's another layer there. Okay, I saw another question here.
Okay, go.
I'm like, okay. I think this is such a good one. How often do you speak with your family and how often do you visit? For my wife and I, we both lived in places where our families didn't live.
Mm-hmm.
And like Christmas is very important to her with her family. Because
holidays
it's a big
thing. Are very tricky, especially when one or both people in the relationship have boundary issues. It's hard to say no to your family.
Yeah, like for our first part of our relationship, though we had a son because things changed a little bit,
A kid, so everyone would start coming to you, right?
Well, let's hope. That hasn't happened yet because we've been with them a lot, the families. But I would go to her Christmas, and then on Christmas Day, I would spend the morning, and then I'd fly out and go to my family by myself because her and her family. And I was like, at some point, we have to become a we here. And how we do that. And so we've had these mm-hmm. types of conversations.
And also, what traditions are important to you on this holiday, no matter how we spend it?
Yeah.
So whether we're with your family or my family, what things can we do together to keep this authentic? Or is there something from your childhood that you really want to make sure we do while we're still at my family's this year so that I can honor what you had?
Yeah, it's...
First of all, by the way, identifying those things is step number one.
So that you can
So you have to ask yourself the question first.
Third base ain't what it used to be. That's a great quote.
So that's by Logan Levkoff, who's a great sex therapist, sex educator. And I interviewed her for the book, and her stuff in here is pretty great.
What type of house or apartment do you prefer to live in, urban or rural, city or suburbs? Now that you, because you're a former New Yorker.
Mm-hmm. I like to say I gained London. I didn't lose New York. So I'm a bit of both.
That's nice. Yeah, mm-hmm. You like a bit of the city and a bit of the suburbs.
Yeah, and we know that in New York, we are in the burbs and happy there. And in London, we're super central.
Oh,
you are. And that's the right decision for us.
Yeah. Yeah, these are all such because like for my wife and I, we lived on an acreage for a bit mm-hmm. after we lived in a busy area in Vancouver. And then living on an acreage obviously had tremendous benefits.
Yeah.
But then when we had a kid, we're like, wait, there's no one around. And so you start to all these practicalities that are actually really important.
Well, and here's the thing. This is why talking about something early, you can't solve your entire life right now by asking and answering all these questions, but you can start the dialogue and you can know that things change, but it's so much easier to revisit a conversation that you've had than to bring it up for the first time.
Yeah, I agree. The one has so much trepidation about it. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never talked about this. And you'll hear someone say that 6 months into a relationship.
Years like, in.
Yeah, we didn't talk about kids.
I'm getting, so you are one of the first to read. I've started doing interviews. I've got a crazy week of press and I'm finally able to talk about this book now comprehensively because people are reading it. But the feedback I'm getting from people is, oh my God, I'm 3 years in and we've never spoken about that. Or thank you. This is something that has been simmering at the surface. I didn't know the words. I didn't have the words. You gave me the words to bring up. And I keep saying to people, blame me.
That's it. Blame yeah, it's funny. I
me.
That.
I will take the hit. Say I read this book. I had to read this book. I'm doing a piece on this book. Can you answer some questions for me? I want to see how this feels.
Yeah, I felt that I created these things called Create the Love Cards. Mm-hmm. And they're 80 questions. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And I would say to people, like, have the questions you want answered. Blame the card game.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's so much, like, what are you looking for in a long-term partner? Why does that matter to you? What do you want a long-term, you know, what are you mm-hmm. looking for in a relationship? Because we don't often ask these things when we're looking for a relationship.
Right.
It's like mind-blowing.
Even we don't ask them before, too. And I don't mean the frivolous things. Okay, I mean, someone said to me, I don't want to be with someone whose parents are divorced. To me, that says a lot about you.
Yeah, me too.
Why?
Yeah.
Examine that. These are really concrete. That's why there's 250 of them.
Yeah.
Specific questions. Look, not everyone is going to apply to you, but most of them are pretty relevant.
What was the greatest like learning you had writing this book and going on this journey in terms of like putting it all together? Or maybe more than one.
I find that we are still living this book. We are still asking each other these questions. We have check-ins about lots of things, which to me is fun and exciting and special. There's a chapter here on routines and rituals, which is so easily overlooked, but so supremely important.
Yeah.
Routines figuring out, it's at the end, figuring out what keeps us grounded. What, when we have really busy weeks, for us getting in bed and doing the New York Times crossword puzzle together and those games we do every night together. But when we've had a busy, I'm traveling now. We haven't done it for a week. I guarantee you, you know, I'll get back and we will both be really looking forward to doing those things that really hold us together. So for me, it's living what I've created. I didn't do it all correctly the first time. This is not something I created and aced. This is something I lived by trial and error. So really living, practicing what I'm preaching feels really great.
Did you and the Brit have any of the questions bring up like big speed bumps?
Yeah.
Yeah. Were there any that were like, I'm not sure we can do this? Or how do we do this? Maybe
there was more, how do we do this? I think for us, we came from different worlds. But we had the same ideas for how we wanted to live our lives. And we were really pretty aligned on a lot of big issues. How to spend money, for one, how to raise kids, things like that. Though parenting is different. And you know also, shit gets brought up as you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That really brings out where you came from. And being able to talk about that in the moment is really important. But for us, we both had the desire to dig in and get to know each other on that deeper, cellular, intimate level. Sex is a mask for intimacy in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So yes, the physical was there, but really understanding each other was important to us both.
Did you where would you recommend that someone bring the book into the relating process?
So that's the beauty of this book. Read it for the story, read it for the understanding, read it to ask yourself questions. But there are many on-ramps in this book. You can do it by starting with questions about pets and then going to communication and then going to sex. You can do it in order. But it should give you the confidence to realize where your particular relationship needs a little love and give you the understanding of how to approach it.
Yeah, to be able to structure the language is so important. Like, I know in the work that I do, it's like we often provide scripts for people.
Yeah.
Or, you know, what does a boundary sound like? How would that? Because we don't have the language. We never learned it. We never witnessed it in our family. These types of questions we may never have been asked. Did you start off in your relating process, were you always a question asker?
I think I was initially. In life, I'm curious. But again, to go back to what we talked to at the beginning, I became more afraid to ask questions of the people I was seeing because I wanted a partner. I wanted the right partner, but I still really wanted a partner. So I wasn't asking questions. And that's where I started to lose myself.
Isn't that so fascinating?
Yeah. You're afraid of the answer.
Yeah.
Or you're afraid someone's going to ask you the question. And then what are you going to say? Are you going to be honest? Or are you going to agree with them?
When you presented the idea to the Brit,
mm-hmm.
because he's like now starting to be long distance.
So
did
here's
you present
what,
it pre or?
Here's what happened.
Yeah.
We were on a FaceTime. And it was late at night. For him, I was sort of at home after a work day. And I didn't know we were on the cusp of this pivotal moment, because you rarely do. And I said something to him. And his immediate response was, I don't know you well enough yet.
How long had you been dating at that point?
Long enough for me to feel like I was smacked across the face and like hurt. And I thought, what? What are you talking about? And I got off the phone with him fairly quickly because I was hurt and I felt hurt. Then I took a moment and I realized he's right. And I'm laughing now because he's the person that he really is right a lot. Shout out to the Brit. He really is. He's just
Brit.
That person whose gut. He's right. But he was right at the time. And again, it's like, you have sex with someone and you think you know them, but actually there's so much more digging. And he was basically saying, there's way more digging that we have to do. And I don't even remember what I asked him, but I'm so glad that was his response because immediately I started like Googling and looking online and thinking of ways to get to know each other better and jumping in to fix what he wasn't saying was broken, but what I'm so grateful he said we needed to then do with each other.
He was really inviting.
Like, he was.
I want to know you more before whatever it is.
Well, he's such a good guy, such a decent guy, because we got to a place in our relationship where we almost broke up. Because I wanted more. And he said, in a way, he initiated the pause. Because I was sort of ending it thinking he wasn't committing to me. And he said to me, before we really go further, you deserve everything from me if it's going to be me. And I need a minute to just think about whether I can do that. We're in two different countries. Were different religions. This came from me of sort of saying, you know, two countries, two religions, two ways of growing up, all of this different. And that was the moment where we had a bit of a pause. And when we came together, it was like, okay, let's do this.
Did he return to you after some time?
So here's where my dating history almost ended us. I didn't realize when he said, I want to think about this, I hadn't read your book because it hadn't come out yet.
No.
I'd been burned so many times before in terms of people ghosting or thinking it was something and it was not. I didn't realize that he was going to take a step back during this time to think about it. And that we wouldn't be texting incessantly or talking on the phone or seeing each other. So I interpreted his taking a step back as a slow path to ghosting.
Mm-hmm.
Not because that's what he was doing, but because of my history, my being afraid of disapproval or, you know, having gone through that before, not trusting what he was saying.
Right? That makes sense, though. 100%. Based on what you've been through.
100%. So I reached out to him and I ended it because I was sparing myself the pain of just never hearing from him again.
Right. You're like, okay, well, if you're going to end it anyways, I'll end it.
I'm going to protect, I'm going to do it and I'm going to protect myself.
Yeah. Makes sense. And
I couldn't do it over the phone. So I sent him an email. Couldn't do it. Too like messy cry, you know, snot, grossness, red face. I can't be seen like the last vision of him seeing me is not going to be like a hot mess, right? So he got that email and within 20 seconds picked up the phone and he was like, what? Where is this coming from? I don't understand. And he had once said something to me that was like, I always preferred when a relationship would end if someone else would do it because I hate being that person. So I really thought he was pushing me to be that person.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Right?
After you've heard that.
I internalized that too. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. That's a rational response to that statement.
I was so rational in this crazy state. And he said, hold on a minute. I want this. I'm ready to come back to you and say, let's go. He said, let's give it a proper go in his English accent. But
that sounds even better.
It's like anything sounds
Notting
better.
Notting Hill or something.
Anything sounds better.
Without you bringing forward that line, that boundary, which
boundary?
Of like, this isn't going to work for me.
Uh-huh.
I actually, like in my experience, that's actually the potency of what creates the like pressure on both people's wounds to
could be
for him to emerge because he needed, at least in what I've seen.
Thank you for validating my way in this.
Because he needed, you needed to do that to finally claim what you're worthy of.
It was important for me for the journey that I had been on in claiming myself.
You needed to hear your typing, not your voice, but you needed to hear your voice be expressed.
Yes.
And he needed to hear a woman express that. So that he could be called forward into a deeper commitment. If a woman wrote me that, if I was in, I'd pick up the phone in 20 seconds. If I wasn't, I'd exhale.
It was not because I'm a writer. It was beautifully written because I cared so much for him. It was, yes.
But you cared for you.
Correct.
Yeah. And like that is baking the cookies without the hook. You know, that he's like, oh, like she's not going to put up with shit.
This is a life of cookies. This is not just an immediate cookie tray.
Yeah, and you're not doing it for
you can't cut out any of these cookie references because then there's people who are watching are just not going to understand.
Give us these goddamn cookies. There is such an important, to me, I'm like, yes, it actually takes that because with that call, you're now, without the email, there's maybe no call, there's assumptions. And so it like creates the perfect recipe to be met.
We're just going all cookie here.
recipe. I didn't even realize I did that.
No pun intended.
No, seriously, I didn't. But to actually be met. And I think there's something so healing in our being that we meet ourselves first in our worthiness. And then someone else says, I see you.
Absolutely.
And I choose you. And I'm not going anywhere. I want to.
And I'm
going to
be thoughtful about this
you.
Choice because we both deserve that.
In a British accent.
I mean, it's so sexy.
Gosh.
So sexy.
That wasn't British.
It wasn't, but we'll overlook it. And then, by the way,
that sounds lovely.
That sounds beautiful. This book is not happy-go-lucky, just straightforward bliss, right? Those ups and downs, this story is in the book. You know, the story of how we almost killed the dog, Latte, another food name.
That's so good.
Is in the book and what that taught us about each other.
That's so good. Does he write in the book?
He does not write in the
book. Is he going to come out as a, like a guest?
It's so funny. He's so great also. He's in finance. He's not in media at all. But he's a great interview subject. He's funny. He has that dry British sense about him. So I'm waiting for someone to ask because I think he really would rise to the occasion.
I would love to interview both of
okay.
you. I think it'd be great. So fun once you're done your tour.
We need an excuse to come back to Vegas because now that I've been here, I'd like to come here with him.
It'd be so fun.
I mean, true.
There's actually a lot of fun stuff for kids here.
I don't know my way around a casino, so I was a little intimidated yesterday. Yeah, I just couldn't makes sense. Do it.
I mean, they're weird. The energy in them, the oxygen's being pumped into them. I mean, I don't live here, but this is where I record.
Yeah.
Because Level 9 Studios, shout
Hello?
Out to Sky.
Hi.
It's the best. And my wife's family's from here.
I also wanted, I don't know, like Ocean's 11 kind of casino
yeah.
or like old school
That's on
casino.
Fremont.
Yeah.
I
just felt it was very, lots of lights.
Yo, it's
but like
wild.
LED lights, not yeah. old school, wear a ball gown and go to a casino.
Which is like, doesn't that, the romance of like the Frank Sinatra,
yeah.
like the Rat Pack being here, the mob, you know, like all the things.
All of
it's
it.
Like old New York.
Mm-hmm.
I always think when I'm walking down the meatpacking district and the cobbles, there's the brick streets.
Yep.
I'm like, how many feet have walked here? Like,
I think about that stuff a lot, too.
Yeah, London, I felt the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Canada doesn't really have a lot of... The East Coast, like Toronto, Montreal, has more history. But the West Coast doesn't really have a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't feel all the feet that have walked there because they haven't. But, you know, there's also a beauty to, like, standing on a barren hill and knowing you might be the only one who's ever stood there. That's like an opposite feeling.
It's great.
Yeah. Okay, I think the routine one, I just...
Okay.
Would you say you're a very routinized?
Routinist.
Routinist sort of person? Do your days tend to look the same or follow the same patterns? Do you follow a strict schedule? Are you more spontaneous and come what may? Wow, that's like will bring out so many. Like my wife is more structured.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with writing a book together. That was a process. Prepared us for parenthood.
Definitely.
But amazing like how she's more... Routinist? Is that the right?
Routinized, yeah.
I'm like, what is
she appreciates
that?
Routine.
She does, and more structure, more mm-hmm. predictability, which I'm like, because of my, I'm like, survival strategy is like, fly by the seat of my
Let's
pants.
Let's just go.
And I didn't hear this till recently, that if you're someone who's really driven by deadlines, you're actually, you seek the nervous system dysregulation to create. And I was like, oh, that is me. You know, it's like
so
I.
So interesting.
Yeah.
So like growing up, if you had a week to complete your homework, would you do it the night before?
In university, I'd stay up and write papers the night
oh
before
my God.
They're due.
I don't know how people do that.
My wife would not. So our book,
I
when there was a deadline,
can't
I'm like.
Even do it.
Like it's
we'll
a
make
deadline.
It.
What are deadlines? And she was like, deadlines are deadlines. They are exactly what they're called. And so that was the conflict that created was actually really important to explore mm-hmm. our differences. And
yep.
how do I manage her need for preparation and my need for fluidity? Because, and she used the term that liberation through limitation. And I had always thought limitation was actually constricting. And I started
so
to see the value of constriction. I think it's I've never really actually thought of this, so real-time process.
Okay, let's do it.
But of like, I think because I felt like my mom, shout out to you if you're listening.
Hi, mom.
That
your mom
she
and
was
my mom.
Very structured
mm-hmm.
and very like rigid about rules.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that's why I'm like, oh, you want to give me a rule?
You went the other way.
Yeah.
So shout out to both of our moms now. I'm going to look at the camera for this one. There is a joke throughout my childhood and still now, it's, you know, when my mom says something, it's now.
Like it's
do
not.
It. Now. No, don't do it in an hour. Don't go pee. Do it now.
And that was like throughout?
That was growing up. It's, oh, mom wants you to do something. Now.
Mm.
And you joke about it, but it gets in there.
Right.
And you're either going to run from that or you're just going to do it now and adopt it.
Yeah, which for me, I was like, I'm going to go the other way.
Well, so, and
when
by
I
the
could,
way,
when I could.
This is like talk about structure versus unstructure. So my husband and I have this dynamic too. I want to just get things done. Before I kind of put on my pajamas and get into bed at night, I really want to just finish. And for him, he works really hard. He works long hours. His mind, his brain, he's really like focused. So he a lot of times needs to just chill out, scroll, watch something, hang out, do a crossword puzzle, and then go finish up. But that doesn't always align with couples.
Yeah.
So how do you work that? How do you do that?
Right. It's such a... The merger of two worlds, it's already hard enough to run one world.
Right.
But the merger of two, and then the merger
then
of two
kids?
With a kid.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so happy you talk about children in this because
yeah.
that was...
Yeah, look, we talk about sleep. We talk about children. We talk about in-laws.
Yeah.
Big stuff.
Those are big things. They are. Especially, you know, you hear a lot of people complain about their, like, partner's relationship with their mother or father or both. And how they don't feel like there's space for them or whatever. Mm-hmm. These are all conversations that need to have. You know, I think it's like, and do you have boundaries with your family? Was your family toxic? Like you were asking that question you were mentioning about how do you fight? And how did you witness conflict handled when you were young?
Yep.
You know, often
did you ever see it handled?
Exactly. That's what I mean is you hear a lot of people will say, oh, we didn't have conflict. Oh, you did. It just was either avoided. And one thing I noticed a lot, I didn't see a lot with my parents, and they're actually celebrating 50 years in
That's amazing.
January. But I'd see the odd conflict in front of us, which I don't remember any like specific one, but I'd see the odd tension, but I never saw repair.
So we didn't either,
yeah.
my brother and I. And I don't think... It's not their fault.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, an argument would start in front of you, but then it would finish elsewhere. So then the repair would happen elsewhere, right? And unless you're consciously deciding to show that to people, it's so natural for it to not be shown to people.
Yeah, unless you're thinking, I want this to be exposed to my children so they can see it.
Right, like I subjected them to seeing this and the feelings of that. I should show them how it goes from that to okay.
Yeah, and I used to think, like when my son was 3 months, that if we had a conflict in front of him, it's not a big deal because he can't understand it yet. His body understands all of it. And then it's like, if mom and dad aren't okay, am I okay?
Right.
You know, and so there's, even though we're well okay, it was just like the experience of the child not understanding the words, but only understanding
They feel your energy. I mean, you can feel like when your kid walks into a room of high stress and high tension, their behavior is off. I've seen it with my kids.
My son, he'll just be like, Dada, like point more at the book. And I'm like, I'm trying to resolve this challenge. And he's like, Dada, dump truck.
Something
and
in like, them is feeling that. They do feel the energy.
Yeah. These questions are so profound. This book, hilarious. I'm so happy that I got a copy on In the Hands.
In the Hands.
Yeah. The digital one, not as, I was like.
There is something about seeing it like
I
this
love
and
a
feeling
book.
It.
I
Me
also
too.
Love audiobooks. So did you read it?
So it's not been recorded yet, but it will be very soon. Yeah.
Are you going to read it?
I'm not actually.
You're not?
I was going to.
Yeah.
And
that's always the question you're going to get, by the way.
Did you read yours?
We did.
You did. I had a feeling you would say that. So I am very sensitive to voices. Not that I hear voices. I'm sensitive to
it's
voices.
Okay if you do.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I listen to books constantly.
So
and
do
that's, I. That's when I read. That's how I consume. I love a lot of people listen to podcasts. While they're listening to podcasts, I'm listening to books. So I actually chose an audio book talent whose voice I just absolutely love.
That's amazing. That's perfect.
Yeah.
So thank you for making the trip. Thank you
thank
for turning.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited we had this conversation.
Me and too. I've been a fan of yours for a long time. I didn't actually tell you that. I waited to the end, but I love what you do. I love what you put out. I love the confidence and reassurance of your messaging. And I love the safety that you give people in your teaching. And I have always responded to that. So
thank
it's
you.
An honor to be here with you.
Well, I'm so happy you wrote this. Like
thank
to
you.
Take
Me too.
What you've been through and turn it into something that everyone can go pick up a copy.
Please.
Now
Let's
go
do
get
it.
One. Run, don't walk. Because whether you're in a relationship or single or dating, There is everything in here for you. And I'm really looking forward to tonight, actually, because I heard
that
people
start
banging as soon as they start reading the questions.
They do. I mean, it's crazy, the intimacy that happens.
So I'm like, she won't even know. I'll be doing foreplay by asking her questions.
Hey,
what is it? Foreplay starts between the ears? I heard that one.
That's good. It's not in my book, but that's good.
I would
say one more thing about this book is so good for now, because it has an empowerment value to it, to both sides of a relationship. I was so sick of books like The Rules and He's Just Not Into You and certain tentpole books that are very fun to read, but that really dictated how people related emotionally in relationships. I needed to change that story. I needed to change that narrative and give the power to the people in it.
I like that, the rigidity to the other ones. Mm-hmm. This brings the fluidity.
This brings you.
And that relationships are generative. Mm-hmm. They're relational.
So that you can love yourself and be your best self, so that your relationship starts in the best place it can be.
Amazing. Lindsay Jill Roth, where do people find more of you? Find the book everywhere. Books
exactly.
are sold. Bookshop.org in the UK and the US if you want to support local bookstores.
Definitely.
Which is actually really good for supporting a new book, because it get sales in different bookstores, which is good. So
it's good for all the lists.
Go buy the book. Go buy the audiobook.
And find me at Lindsay Jill Roth on social. I love to hear from you. So follow, email, write, call, whatever.
Well, we, the collective Create the Lovers, wish you nothing but the most success
Thank
in the
you.
Launch of this book and your travels and all your press.
Thank you
Thanks
so much.
Thanks for being here.